my doorbell. When you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. I'm thinking about my doorbell. When you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. I'm thinking about my doorbell. When you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. Yeah, I've been thinking about my doorbell. When we little children, kisses not the man in my life, I know. And I've been going through mysteries, misses, I respect the art of the show. Take back what you say, little girl, and why you had to drink yourself back to. Woman, I'm tired of sitting here waiting, wondering what you're gonna do now, what you're gonna do now. I'm thinking about my doorbell, when you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. Yeah, I'm thinking about my doorbell. When you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. I'm thinking about my doorbell. When you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. Yeah, I've been thinking about my doorbell. Oh, it don't seem to come around. Push your finger and make a sound. You don't seem to come around. Knock, 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 you do not get down. Oh, well. I make you feel right. Woo! Right at home, yeah. Right at home, yeah. You know you got me waiting in vain, but how come it's so easy to you? Always like me at times, I can be callous, but your words seem so obtuse. But then again, I know you feel guilty, and you told me you want me again. But I don't need any of your pity, cause I've got plenty of my own friends. Say all about me. I'm thinking about my doorbell, when you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. I'm thinking about my doorbell, when you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. I'm thinking about my doorbell, when you're gonna ring it, when you're gonna ring it. Yeah, I've been thinking about my doorbell. Oh, well. And I realize I wait for the bell to ring, but I know you know ricky-ticky-ting-ting. So I'm wondering, could it be something? Maybe later on in life we could have meet again. And I may also wait for the bell to ring. Push your finger, girl, and I will give you everything. Everything, everything. Except one thing. Rastafari!
listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And it's time right now for the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. You just heard right there, brand new from Bigga Haitian. That's a cover of My Doorbell by The White Stripes, done by Bigga Haitian, out now on Walk Up Records. Today on the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show, an interview with Sage Francis from Providence, Rhode Island. And to prepare you for the onslaught that is Sage Francis, here's a track by a good buddy of Sage Francis, Mr. B. Dolan, and his song, The Hunter. And right after that, a track by the man in the hour, Sage Francis, his song, Worry Not. And then an interview with Sage Francis, all on the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette Radio Show on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Sitting up in bed when the sun sets. The room is such a mess, keep it darker than the crypt. Rumble in my stomach, reek of garlic and incense. Stumble from the bed, I dreamed of monsters again. Sharpen my instrument as part of my diligence. Polishing springs and pins, hardens the killer instinct. Darkness slips in, I stalk them in the mist. And walk the empty city looking for my nemesis. I'm a vampire hunter, bounty killer. I know my way around and I'm bound to deliver. I've lived among the parasites for more than half my life. Study their evil habits, patterns and appetites. I'm the hunter, hunter. Caravan of gypsies who hand me crucifixes and whisper their superstition. Keep it moving in tune with the moon's position. Set up with a smooth precision, every night's a new mission. I lift the lids of these stale boxes and dirt, cause I put stake in heart and faith in hard work. Now watch the snake eyes awaken surprise as they die. Cut out the heart and burn it at the graveside. Say goodbye, saving lives and the pay is fine. Besides, the truth is I get a thrill when it comes to the killing time. I'm a vampire hunter, a bounty killer. I know my way around and I'm bound to deliver. I've lived among the parasites for more than half my life. Studied their evil patterns, habits and appetites. I'm a hunter. Human. They're not the people you remember. They're the undead, the beast, the cannibal, the predator. They are diseased, they feed off death. But there's a sacred mutilation that will lay them to rest. You need a vampire hunter, a bounty killer. Who knows his way around and is bound to deliver. Who's lived among the parasites for more than half his life. Study their evil patterns, habits and appetites. I wear my sunglasses at night. I don't know why I'm just sensitive to the light. When I was young, I had such a strong sense of wrong or right. Them days are gone, life is long, not forever, right? These silver bullets pack a hell of a bite, but I ain't never been a sucker type. Still, I get bloody light. The incident that happened down in Exeter Town, where the daughter of George Brown wouldn't rest in the ground. We had a posse of men, even the Providence Press, dug up the body and cut out the black heart from her chest. Less than a month later, her older brother was dead, and I was wanted by the court to explain what I did. So I ran away and hid in the next city. Something of the strange events must have stayed with me. Made me face the mirror for a moment to question. Imagine my surprise when I saw no reflections.
wrench in my jaw while I sleep. I ain't got no dental insurance, so I purchased a mouthpiece. It helps me collect all my teeth, cause they keep falling out in my dreams. Repeating each step till I'm knee deep in sweat. Till you need deeper sleep between sheets, you'll need sex. If you need to eat meat, then just feed on the flesh. Your willpower's weak, seeking ye shall find death. It'll rent, it'll lease, it'll own you. Can't teach new tricks in an old fool. I've been banned from the Bible, but I stand on my own too. Running from self, but my legs have no proof. Through every last nerve that I got, this conviction is more than deserved. But I'm not killing the time, I'm wringing its neck, choking it out, and I'm stealing its breath, sucking it in and then blowing a kiss to the caution I toss to the wind like this. Dark, then sleep in the light. You came for the bark, then leave when I bite. Breaking a sweat, you fainting awake with a fang in your neck and a pain in your chest. Losing your power, you're drained and you're wet. When you threw in the towel, I caught it like wreck. That was well played. You ain't self-made. You went from daycare to preschool, from K through 12th grade, and that's hard wiring in your brain. Not to mention the rules of the house where you stayed, synagogue, mosque, or the church where you prayed as a child. Tamed like you're wild. Reprogram, deprogram. There ain't nothing they say we don't know, man. They've been bringing on vulnerable people and claiming that everything in us is evil. I see them in hell then. But until then, you should chill, friend. Just chill. Play pretend with the forces of organized superstition and get played in the end. You were killing the time. I was wringing its neck, choking it out and stealing its breath. Sucking it in and then blowing a kiss to the caution I toss to the wind like this.
Are you?
I'm Sage Francis.
Sage Francis, welcome to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Thank you so much.
Sage Francis, right off the bat, what is your connection to Will Smith?
Well,
you have one.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but in 1988, I did a... I was in a mall, and it was back when the malls had... had karaoke type things where you could record a song. I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but I recorded Parents Just Don't Understand by Will Smith, or The Fresh Prince, as he was known back then.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, but that's not exactly what I was thinking about.
What is it?
Here, in 2010, you have a direct connection to Will Smith in your band.
Who is it?
Ikey.
Owens.
Plays in the band.
Mars Volta.
Who's drummer?
I don't know.
Thomas.
Thomas.
Plays in Wicked Wisdom. Jada Pinkett.
Yeah.
Smith's band.
Oh, wait. So he's the drummer in her band?
Yes, as well.
I didn't even know she was a singer. She's rather beautiful.
She's a heavy metal singer. So you kind of have a connection to Will Smith.
I have a better connection to BC, though. I have a better connection to Vancouver. I toured with a guy named C.R. Avery back in 2003, and he's from East Vancouver. And
that's where we are right now.
Really?
The Republic of East Vancouver.
This is the first time I've ever been here. It's a lot of prostitutes and really bad hotels.
Right up your alley.
I love it.
So C.R. Avery?
C.R. Avery is like a one-man band, and... That was many years ago. I mean, that was, 7 years ago? And he All he did was he had a keyboard and he beatboxed and he sang. That's it. And the crowds went crazy for him. And he's still doing stuff out here. And I haven't seen him in a long time. But he's still doing his thing. And I love him. He's my only connection, as far as I knew, to Vancouver.
Sage Francis, you also have a connection to Lance Armstrong.
Oh, yeah? Because of ball cancer?
Could be. Well, actually, what I was thinking was your album artwork from your new CD was designed by...
Shepard Fairey.
Who also designed a bike for...
Lance Armstrong?
Lance Armstrong!
Wow. Well, he's a...
Armstrong, Will Smith, welcome to the Sage Francis family.
I'm officially a sellout. That's pretty interesting.
Sage Francis, also, I'd like to further welcome you to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, by giving you a little gift here. Here, right here, is a Danger Doom cereal bowl. Do you have one of these?
No, I don't.
What is this? Danger Doom. Could you tell the people? Danger Mouse and...
MF Doom
put out the first hip-hop cereal bowl,
or Zeb Love X, as I originally knew him. He also produced the Doomage song, which was a remix of my song called Damage, and he's definitely one of my favorite MCs. He has a wonderful multisyllabic rhyme schemes going on, and he's a cartoon freak.
And what about the Danger Mouse? Right now he wouldn't want to talk to me, would he?
I don't know.
Because we're standing on...
I didn't see your interview with him, but we were standing on gravel. Well, what is this, sand, sort of?
You worked with Danger Mouse, and apparently he has a sand phobia. What can you tell me about that, Sage Francis?
We were doing me and Danger Mouse were doing a photo shoot in Miami Beach, Florida. Miami, my home of birth, actually. And he was very afraid of looking down a street randomly and seeing a beach because he has a high fear of sand. I never understood it, but it made me laugh and made me love him a lot more than I originally did. So, yeah.
And now you can think of him every morning when you have your cereal.
Right here, baby.
That actually was an Epitaph promotional item, I think.
They never did anything like that for me, man. Nothing.
No, it's not over. There's still time. There's still time.
There's no time. All I can do is die right now, and they would promote it well, but... It's my last record with Epitaph, and I never got a cereal bowl, so...
Well, now you got one.
Thank you very much.
Also, I have yet another gift for you, Sage Francis, right here, an iced tea figurine.
Well,
iced tea, and the reason I bring iced tea to you as a gift is because you love the iced tea Vincent Gallo beef. What can you tell the people about that?
Originally, I was a huge Ice-T fan. Ice-T owned all his records. I actually used to record songs of his just on my tape recorder. And later down the line, I became a fan of Vincent Gallo. And he was just like the perfectly asshole actor and artist. And there was this section, there was something I saw where he talked about battling Ice-T and just wrecking him. And I never saw the footage, and I never got verification from Ice-T that he actually battled Vincent Gallo, but I believe that Vincent Gallo probably tore him to pieces.
Because he was on the scene back then, wasn't there? There's footage of him, isn't there?
Well, he did stuff with Jean Basquiat, and... I know Vincent Gallo was a b-boy, and he was probably rapping, so as a lot of people were back then in New York City. So Ice-T is like...
He's still rocking it. This is from 19... Actually, sorry, it's from 2009. This is not an old collectible.
It's crazy. You know what? Recently, he got in a beef with Amy Mann from... like Amy Mann, the singer. And I'm a fan of both of them. I'm sure there's not a lot of rappers who are like equally fans of Amy Mann and Ice-T. But she said that she kind of like disrespected his acting on Law & Order. And what I recommended to her was that she check out his skits on his albums, because he does all the voices of the skits on his albums, and it's really incredible. He's a really good actor on his records. But Ice-T is, he made sure people didn't do drugs, but, you know, pimping hoes is okay.
So. Sage Francis, how did you find me? Why are we here today? How did you find me?
I walked across you at South by Southwest, and I had records in hand.
How did you know who I was? Like, how did you find me?
Well, I saw you on YouTube.
Like I said, how did you find me?
The first interview I saw with you was with NERD, and then it was Snoop Dogg. Oh, no, then it was Jay-Z. Then it was Snoop Dogg. And then I watched everything else. It was from Rollins to everybody. I watched everybody, and I think I saw everybody, but yeah.
Well, thanks so much for stopping on the street.
I brought you a gift as well.
Oh, well, thank you, Sage.
Because I did watch...
That's so cool.
I did watch you on YouTube, and I did a little bit of research. I know that you're a good music journalist, which is very rare this day and age in music journalism. So while driving through Wisconsin, I bought you some cheese that is incredibly hard to find. It's aged by 5 years, and you can't get it anywhere else but Wisconsin. So here you go.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Sage. Thank you. That's incredible because, you know, I got a disease I'm addicted to.
Cheese.
And I've never been to... Okay, I've been to Green Bay. But this is this is like truck stop cheese.
It's not a truck stop. That's an actual cheese store. They have cheese stores in Wisconsin. It's not a gas station. This was like a lot of Canadian dollars right here. So, I mean, I paid for this respect.
Oh, man, I love the cheese. So you're into the cheese too, eh? Not totally, because you're a bit of a vegan, aren't you?
I've never been vegan. I've been pegged as a vegan. I've got certain connections to PETA that I wish that they would totally kill, because they told me that I get to rap with some cool rappers, and it never happened. That's all.
Well, thank you so much for the cheese. I love Wisconsin cheese. Wisconsin Cheese Mart. That's awesome.
It has been sitting in our van for a couple of weeks. So, I mean, eat at your own risk.
That's okay. When you're hungry, hunger is the best chef of all. Thank you so much.
I love you.
Well, thank you, Sage. We're actually not quite finished here. I was wondering, continuing back to, all the way back to South by Southwest. So you're walking down the street at South by Southwest. You bump into me. I'm speaking to Peter Rosenberg from...
Hot 97.
And then you showed me all your records that you had, and one record you have totally drove me crazy. It was an L. Ron Hubbard Space Jazz. What can you say about that record, the Space Jazz record?
Well, I found a lot of great records there. The L. Ron Hubbard Space Jazz record, I've been afraid to actually put my needle to. I feel like I have to reach a certain maturity and evolution in my life before I do that, and I feel like the sky will open up and rays of sunlight will come down and pick me up. I'm not ready for that. I kind of like my time on Earth right now, but
it was an Edward R. Murrow record too that you picked up.
Right. Well, I'm a journalism. I graduated college with a journalism degree, and I feel like he's a very brave journalist, and he's someone who inspired what I do. And Edward R. Murrow is I still haven't listened to that record either. I've been traveling since I saw you, but...
And there was another record you picked up that you were totally excited about, some rare rap collectible. What was that one?
There was this guy named Box, B-O-X. It was initials, and it stands for Beyond Ordinary Existence. And the only reason I knew him was because way back, I mean, really, really way back, when the only access I had to hip-hop was through college radio stations was... I think it was a Boston radio station called WERS in Boston. He was a guest on their show, and that's the only reason I knew him. And that was about 20 years ago. So when I saw that record, it was the first time I ever, I dig a little bit. So like the fact that I saw that record, I never saw it before. I kind of bugged out and I picked it up.
And this is at South by Southwest. You don't expect to be able to find it with all the record nerds around, eh?
Man, like the record nerds, I don't think they paid attention to this because it was so obvious that there's a big record convention, so that I think record nerds really look for...
No, the record nerds were there, because I read Maximum Rock and Roll, the punk bible. One of the columnists there, I think his name might be Graham Booth, went out and bought a whole bunch of amazingly rare records that he'd never seen before at that place.
by chance he was there, I bet.
No,
I ran a lot. I ran across a lot of record nerds, and they paid it no mind. They didn't want to go to the record convention because it was publicly announced and no one cared. But I went in there, and there was more records than I could ever flip through within the time allotted. So I went to the rap section immediately. Each one was $1. I went through. Some of them were even cheaper than that. I picked out all the stuff that I've never seen before. And when I bought it from the old white guy, I was like, "How do you have this stuff?" And he was like, "The only records that we sell at these conventions are hip-hop records, so we just pick up any hip-hop record we can find." And I was like, "Well, thank you." That's it.
And then you went out on the street and listened to a guy sing like Burt
Reynolds.
What was that about?
I have no idea. What street was that on? That was
the fourth.
Yeah, that was like the main, like, active street of Austin. I had a lot of friends who were performing on that street. Just randomly, I walked by this barbecue spot, and they had a DJ, and they were playing records. And some MCs that I knew from back in the day were freestyling, and I just kind of was sitting in the background. I haven't really gotten involved in the cypher stuff in a long time, so I kind of just wanted to watch. But they invited me up on the stage, and we did a freestyle about Burt Reynolds' mustache.
For like about 20 minutes.
Yeah, for 20 minutes. And I did a little, I got the onyx came out in me.
But the interesting thing about that, though, Sage Francis, is the strange famous mustache
logo?
Removal.
Oh, strange famous, yeah, right, the mullet removal.
Oh, the mullet removal. Well, mullet, mustache, you know, same sort of thing.
I used to have a mullet on my lip. But
you have a song, and I was wondering, what can you tell the people about Hubert Laws, who you sampled for that?
Oh, violation.
You can tell the people
violation,
about
violation.
It was on your first record. It's on Anticon. It's okay. It's the first record.
Violation!
You'll get sued, not you.
No, I will. I will.
You will. Well, you got it, Con. Give him some props.
I love you. Please. Please don't be mad at me. I love your music. Reanimator from Chicago. He's a highly underrated producer who originally paid you the respects. And yeah.
But you also played respects to the good old Brian Auger with your song.
Woo!
With your song, Inherited.
Johnny Didn't Kill Johnny.
Inherited Scars. Brian Auger, that's a...
Wait a second.
It's Anticon. It's your first record.
No, fuck that. Right.
Brian Auger, though. Brian, this is a great record. Come on.
Of course. No, he's incredible. All the people... Listen, part of the reason why my final record, I mean, as far as, like, big time, like, go all out, big projects are concerned, why it was recorded in the studio with all live musicians is because we're just getting waxed. We're really getting hurt. I mean, not only are we not selling as many records as we used to, and it's not because our fan base is less, but it's because the whole industry is hurting. So they're going out and they're really, like, attacking people, whoever they can, to get whatever they can out of them. So,
Sage Francis, I have a quote from Sage Francis. Quote, Drake, problem number one, he's from
Canada.
What?
Well, I guess as far as Americans are concerned, they're not really aware that he's Canadian.
Well, do you want to come clean on Canada? Because you've said in past...
What have I said in past?
You said in past you've given Canada a bad rap.
Why is that?
So, like, Drake doesn't have a chance because he's Canadian.
Oh, no. He obviously has a chance. He's huge. I mean, he broke into the mainstream culture of America, all of America, Canada and America. But he also did that by emulating American rappers almost to the T. So, and it didn't hurt that he had good connections in the music industry.
Sage Francis, another Canadian, Buck 65.
Right.
What did he do wrong?
Well...
Because according to Pitchfork, this is from Pitchfork, they said Sage once publicly bashed Buck 65 for the crime of distancing himself from hip-hop.
Oh, that's not the crime.
From rap.
That, yeah, but that's not the crime. The crime really was, when that happened, what was reported on was his, him saying that there was no talent involved in hip hop, and that was the crime. And, he says, and he's adamant about it, that that's not what he said. He said that he was misquoted in the interview. He talked to me after that, and we've been really good friends. I mean, the first time I ever...
Isn't he on your new album too?
Right. He's been on multiple albums of mine, and, we just saw him last, or 2 weeks ago in Toronto where he lives. And, I regret that. There's a few things that I regret where I had a knee-jerk reaction, and I was upset that someone that I was so closely associated with would have said that, where he said that hip hop was not, it didn't take any talent to do, and it was just very bizarre. So I made a public statement. I was like, that's bullshit, and you must have your head up your ass if you think that. And I really don't think he thinks that. I really don't think he ever thought that, but it's what he said, and it was in a context that I wasn't familiarized with, I guess. But he did produce some music for me on the new record, and my last record, and the last record. So that was all cleared up by within a few months. I actually... Fuck Pitchfork, by the way. But what's the big Coachella? I played Coachella in 2004 and 2005. I can't remember which one I saw him at. It must have been 2005. But he was on stage, and I'm such a hardhead. I'm such a hardhead. I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't want to see him. I just was upset still. And he was performing on stage. He gave me a shout out. He gave me a lot of love, and it's that kind of stuff that kind of melts me. I started feeling bad about anything that I said about him. I should have, like, given him more credit. So he's a homie, and that's my major Canadian connection. And he's the one guy who I in the world of hip hop who inspired me. There's nobody else in Canada who has inspired me as much as Buck 65.
And here we are in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Now, if we traveled to your hometown, we'd been Providence,
Rhode Island.
And I actually have been to Providence
for what?
For a festival hosted at Fort. Fort Thunder, the warehouse.
Yeah, that's nice.
My band, The Evaporators, played in Providence, Rhode Island at Fort Thunder, and we got to back up the puppet show Whack Attack.
When was that?
This was about 1998 or something.
It's possible I was there.
So you were at the gig where we backed up the puppet show. That was one of our amazing gigs, backing up the puppet show. Do you remember Whack Attack?
Was there a...
We played on the bed at Fort Thunder.
Was there a makeshift, like, wrestling ring in the room?
I thought it was like a bed, and we played, like, on the bed.
Fort Thunder has been going on for a long time. I don't know if it's still around. There was, like, a police crackdown. Providence, Rhode Island has a very, like, heavy underground scene. And partially because we have a very industrial section of the city with a lot of warehouses. And we also have a couple art colleges. We have a lot of artsy folks out there who just go crazy in that section. That's not heavily regulated. So they do whatever the fuck they want. No regulations. They go crazy. There's one of the more times I ever got bugged out in Providence was at Fort Thunder, and it's because I felt like whatever I did, whatever I touched, whatever I touched with my tongue, I'd be tripping on acid. So I was very careful not to do anything or not to touch anything or eat anything.
Do you remember the puppet show Whack Attack? I wonder what happened to them.
No, I don't. I think we have this thing called... trying to remember. There's a band. I don't know if it's a band, but they're
whole. Isn't that great though? A Canadian band goes to Fort Thunder and gets to open for the puppet show.
It's crazy. Were they big heads or what?
No, they had like just a little puppet show, a tiny little puppet show. And then we went to LA and played a gig, and we headlined over the puppet show.
Well,
and that puppet show was led by Jack Black's wife,
Meg White.
Jack Black.
Oh, Meg Black?
Something like that. That was in L.A. Anyways, back to Providence, Rhode Island. You were saying Fort Thunder, though. Because I was wondering about puppet shows and stuff. Some rappers are afraid of puppets, aren't they? Like Vanilla Ice is afraid of puppets.
I don't know. Shit, that's a tough position for a puppet to be in.
And also, when I think of ice, I think of fire. And then I think of that terrible Great White incident. Did did you actually go to that club ever?
No, I didn't. I was on tour when that happened, and over 100 people died in the station, which is in, I think, Warwick, Rhode Island. And we saw it on the news. We were all the way across the country. And being from Rhode Island, you hardly ever hear about your own state or even city. And we saw it on the news, and it was crazy. It was really, really sad. And we're still feeling the effects of it because we're such a small state that, like...
You ever played there? Did you know anybody that ever played there?
Never knew. I had no idea how the hell, like, that existed outside of my, knowledge. And Great White played there? No, I don't know. But, yeah, something went very wrong. Now I can't light off fireworks at my own shows, and that's upsetting.
And you were the sage of...
I was the sage of...
Providence?
Sage of Providence?
Some people have called you the sage of Providence.
I'm the sage of...
But that's actually a book about H.P. Lovecraft, because he's from your hood, isn't he? Right. Lovecraft. We're going to talk about the Lovecraft. You got any Lovecraft connections?
Just Halloween. Just on Halloween.
Because he's like H.P. Lovecraft.
H.P. Lovecraft, which probably a lot of people don't know about.
He's a great writer, and he makes me think of H.P. Get Busy, which is one of Jay-Z's first joints.
Yeah.
And he's just a hypo-nempsy.
Right.
Which makes you think of Youth Crews and stuff like that. You mentioned me interviewing Jay-Z. I didn't ask Jay-Z too much about that, but I saw...
That would have been a good question for Jay-Z.
I asked him rapping about jazz, but not about his first one, hypo-nempsies. But H.P. Get Busy, it makes me think of old crews, and then I saw this clip on the internet of an old crew challenging you. What was going on there, Rhode Island? A guy in the audience in red jumped up on stage. He's from one of your old crews, wasn't it?
Well, that was old. That's kind of old news. I kind of try to keep it under wraps a little bit, but I'm done.
It was an amazing incident, though, wasn't it?
It was, because this guy came up on stage, wanted to battle me, and his girlfriend or whatever, some girl he was with, I think he was with her, but she came up on stage and battled him instead of me battling him, and she took care of the situation, and I just went on with my show.
Did you ever read the Boston Alt Weeklies at all?
A little bit.
In the back of the Boston Alt Weeklies, there's always ad for sex and porn and massage.
Right.
And the address actually goes to Providence. Is there a lot of places there?
Well, more in Providence. I'm from Providence, but... Oh, is that what you said? Providence, right? Providence is run by some corrupt people. And we have more strip clubs and probably decadent spots per capita, per square mile than any other city in the world other than Amsterdam. So, yeah.
You also have the dunk.
Yeah, we have the dunk.
What is the dunk for people that don't know?
The dunk is... the Civic Center. Well, when I grew up, it was called the Civic Center. It's the big arena where the giant shows happen. And Dunkin' Donuts purchased it, called it the Dunk. I don't call it the Dunk, but that's where I saw my first concert. Public Enemy, Run DMC, EPMD, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, and LL Cool J made a surprise appearance there.
And now you kind of have the Fresh Prince in your band.
Right.
So just quizzing you on this interview, who's in your band and what's your connection to Fresh Prince? My connection?
The drummer for the band that's playing for me on this tour plays in the band that Jada Pinkett screams in. Is that what you said? She's a thrash metal...
Really? Wicked Wisdom.
I don't believe it.
No, it's true. She is the singer of a heavy metal band, Wicked Wisdom. I interviewed them. Oh, yeah. Go ahead and check it out. Now, there's another person I would like to ask you about. What is the importance of Frederick Douglass?
Well, to me or in general, I mean...
To you, because you've quoted him many a time, haven't you?
To humanity, he's an incredible inspiration. Frederick Douglass. One of my favorite quotes is his, which says, without struggle, there is no progress. But... raised as a slave and working himself out of that and teaching himself to read and teaching others how to read and just educating himself not a lot of people have that tenacity or intelligence. He's just like a really amazing man, and I think it made a lot of people who for some reason wanted to believe that the white race was, you know, the shit had to acknowledge that, wow, like this dude who we look down upon and could because he was black is probably much smarter and more clever than we are, and they had to give him the respect he deserved. I give him the respect he deserves.
Sage Francis, you've toured a lot and you filmed a lot of your tours. There's a Life is Easy DVD.
Right.
And on it, there's an amazing clip of you avoiding stuff being chucked up on stage. Where was that?
In 2004, there was the Rock the Bell, the very first Rock the Bells concert, and that was the first time Wu-Tang Clan had performed in 10 years. It was their first reunion, really, and all the members were present. I was there. A lot of other people were there, and whoever put together the lineup didn't really think about the fact that 10,000 people didn't want to see a bunch of openers before Wu-Tang Clan hit the stage. So by the time I hit the stage, it was clear that the crowd was just restless, and I decided to give them a reason to vent. So I took my pants off and threw broccoli at them. And
stuff was getting chucked at you too, wasn't it?
Right. I threw the broccoli, then the broccoli came back at me, but then bottles came back at me and a few bullets came back at me.
That's what I was wondering about. How do you avoid stuff? Like, how do you avoid the bullets when you're on stage? Because it wasn't just a little stage. It was a huge stage. It was like, how do you avoid it? Do you have tips for that? You like the American flag?
Well, many years of martial arts study, and it taught me just to have reflexes. So a bottle would come at me. I could avoid it. Bullets are harder than bottles. Broccoli is much easier than any of the above. So, and even if it hits you, it's kind of fun. So
once you're in that deep stage, is there any way to win over the audience? Like once they're chucking the stuff, can you win them so they stop chucking the stuff?
I did win them over, which you didn't see.
By dropping your pants.
Yeah, that was the second time. But what I find is more interesting about...
So you did win them over, but you didn't include that in the DVD.
It wasn't... Well, it wasn't my DVD. Originally, it was the Rock the Bells DVD, so I kind of stole their footage from my own DVD. But we couldn't use certain footage because of sample clearances and...
Sample clearances?
Shh.
I love it. You've been holding this the entire interview, too.
Anyway, yeah.
But you were saying, though, backstage, what happened afterwards? Like, what happened afterwards? Like, or should I say, how did you stop it? What was the second part of the story?
I don't really know if anything stopped it. What happened was that I kept instigating the crowd. They kept throwing stuff. I took my pants off. I invited all their girlfriends to come up and enjoy the show with me. And then the curtain closed. I stepped in front of the curtain. Stuff kept being thrown. I went backstage. I cried. Which I have footage of, which will be on the next DVD. And that was that. Nothing stopped. I got my money and I actually walked through the crowd. I took my wig off. I walked through the crowd. No one noticed me and $10,000 in my pocket and no one cared.
So there's really no way to stop the bottles. Once they come, there's no way to stop the crowd. There's no way to stop. You never stop the show, though, right?
No. Don't stop the show. I was doing the show, and I remember there was people backstage who were just, like, distraught about the whole thing. They thought that I was ruining my career, and they were, I think, sad.
Little did they know it was already ruined before you even got up on stage. Ba-boom!
I think that revitalized my career at that point, where it was like, you could be any other hip-hop artist who panders to a crowd and tries to get them excited about Wu-Tang Clan performing, but where I was at, I was like, let's just be the bad wrestler of the show, give people a reason to get excited in a different kind of way, and have a fight.
How about in festivals that you've played since? Have you seen that happen to other bands at all, or anybody other?
I've seen a lot of bands get booed or have stuff thrown at them, but nothing to that degree.
How about running with your pants down? You're really good at running with your pants down. How have you perfected that? You like my little demonstration there?
Running away from the cops after being caught back alley. Yeah, it was a little bit of practice.
Because that happens. Do you have like a special belt that you pull like and then the pants drop? It's quite interesting.
I do have a belt. It was made for me by a fan. And let me see. It was, yeah, an actual belt that was made. It was like, it's one of my only leather garment items. But here it is.
And do you wear it every show?
I've worn it for 5 years now. I haven't taken it off. It's just kind of the way I am.
Kalu Biafra has a belt that he's always worn all these years.
Oh, I had no idea, but I'm a huge fan. That's cool. Yeah, It's when people give me stuff that I like, I don't ever want to take it off. I just wear stuff like that.
I'm happy that the pants are staying up, too, right now.
These aren't even my pants. These are B. Dolan's pants. B. Dolan, who's on tour with me.
Co-conspirator.
Right. I ripped my pants the other day. I've been walking around with a huge hole in my crotch. And originally, I had my yellow swim trunks over them to cover up the hole. And everyone got sick of seeing that. So he gave me his pants, which are much too big for me.
Winding up here, Sage Francis, the Scribble Jam.
Yeah.
It's like a rap battle of the bands type thing?
Right. It was the biggest battle back. It's not really going on anymore, but it was 10 years ago, 2000.
You won it in 2000.
I did win it.
Against a guy called Blueprint?
Right, Blueprint from Rhymesayers.
What happened to him? How has his career gone?
It's going well.
I the pants about to drop.
I got
to
spread my legs out a little bit. Blueprint's still doing his thing. He had I think he has a new record about to drop on Rhymesayers. So he's a good homie. We toured together for the Paid Dues tour, and we were on the same bus. We played Pac-Man a lot together.
What I was wondering, though, Sage Francis, is here you win the Scribble Jam in 2000. Eminem won it like 97. When you won it, did you get many offers? You must have been scouts everywhere for major labels.
Well, the difference between me and Eminem is that he actually lost. So.
Okay, so you have to lose it to get the deals.
So you fly a little bit under.
So there must have been some major label guys hanging around.
There were. After I won that, and after I had, I think, proven myself as an artist who can sell a lot of records to people all over the world, there was labels who were snooping around, and one of them actually was his label. They bought all my records from a shop in L.A. They were, like, snooping around a little bit. There was other labels that contacted me, and they all rubbed me the wrong way. I was not trying to be the next Eminem. I wasn't trying to be anyone who they could mold into what they thought could really pander to, I think, like, mainstream urban music. I knew it wasn't for me, so I decided to stay away.
You are very unique, Sage Francis. I've never heard anybody remove their belt during an interview and then try to keep up their pants that particular way.
Well,
but that's not too unique, because you're always into doing stuff unique. I love it when you protested using a sign that had nothing on it. What was that about?
I had nothing to say that day, but I wanted to protest, so I just held up a blank sign.
I love that.
Well, sometimes you just got to practice. Practice makes perfect.
Sage Francis, you have your own hamburger.
Yeah, I do.
Speaking of beefs and stuff, MC Paul Barman, he's so nice. What happened there? You had a beef with MC Paul Barman.
Yeah, I was living in New York at the time, and I picked up a Village Voice, and I think he was on the cover, but he may have just been in the art section or whatever, and it was talking about how this is how white hip-hop is supposed to be. It should be self-deprecating. It should be self-aware of its own nerdiness, which at the time kind of insulted me. I thought that white MCs had a lot more to offer than that. So he became the figurehead of what I didn't like about what was being promoted about white MCs. And that was also right during the time where a lot of people were just kind of exposing themselves as white MCs, where before that, people were masking their race because they didn't want to be judged by their race when they were promoting their music or trying to get people to hear it. So it was a very tense time, and I've met him a couple after that. I actually met Paul Barman, and he was a little jittery, and we've had some discussions. I haven't talked to him in many years, though. I hope he's doing well. I think he is. I heard he has a new album out. I wish all the best for him.
How about the Missoula Mohawk girl? Did she come out?
I was also jealous about Paul Barman because he was working with Prince Paul, who's been one of my favorite producers since I was a kid. And I openly admit I was very jealous about that.
And the Missoula Mohawk girl.
I don't know the Missoula Mohawk girl.
You said on your Twitter.
Yeah, right.
I just thought that is Missoula Mohawk. Who was she?
I have no idea. In 2003, I was playing Missoula, Montana, which is in the middle of nowhere. You have to drive through a lot of mountains to get there. And everybody was tweaked out. Everybody's pupils were very large, and they just were acting very strange. And I hit a severe depression during that show. And I don't know why. I don't know how it all happened, but this girl was there, and I had my hair clippers, and I had her shave a mohawk into my head, and that's how I dealt with the situation. But that was the only time I ever had a mohawk. And I just played Missoula again. It was one of my favorite shows that I've ever done, so I feel like I falsely misjudged Missoula, and I apologize to people from Montana, because you're a lot of very interesting and beautiful people. But in 2003, you were all on crack.
Well, Sage Francis, thank you so much for the interview, and thank you also for the cheese from Wisconsin Cheese Mart, thecheesemart.com. This is amazing. I'm not giving this to you. You're giving this to me. Thank you. I'm so excited to be able to enjoy cheese, because I got a disease. I'm a
cheese freak.
I'm addicted to
cheese.
I'm addicted to cheese. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all, Sage Francis?
Just that I love you, and thank you for doing this interview with me. And Strange Famous Records is going to continue to put out stuff that we think is worth hearing.
Yeah, why should people care about Sage Francis and Strange Famous?
It's independent hip-hop, came up from nothing. The people made it, the people supported it, and as the industry crumbled, we continue to put out good material, and I hope people stay in tune with what we do.
Well, thanks so much, Sage Francis. You're welcome to put the belt back in. Keep on rocking in the free world, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doot.
Christopher Daniel Gay was arrested on a Friday in Florida at the Daytona International Speedway. He was a fugitive on the run. Christopher made a quick escape while being transported in a van that was picking up convicts state to state. He did it during the bathroom break. He hot-wired somebody's pickup. In fact, Christopher had a long history of theft involving trucks. He was en route to Alabama for stealing someone's travel trailer. Grand Theft Auto. He was a career criminal jailbird who also had three outstanding warrants in his home state of Tennessee. It was an outstanding performance that set him free. Stole a big rig, then a tour bus that belonged to Crystal Gale to evade a five-state manhunt that wanted to put that birdie back in jail. But they failed. Cause Christopher wasn't just running from cops. Christopher Gay was now racing the clock. His mother was dying and there was no time to be held inside of a cage with locks. So y'all can turn up your nose and suck on your teeth and wag your finger like tisk tisk. But he had to take the risk. There wasn't a single thing sinister in his decision to break from the prison. His only motive was to go back to his childhood home while his mom was still living. It wasn't a house, more like an old mobile camper, where she was bedridden, diagnosed with colon cancer. Sometimes the only answer we're left with when a loved one's name is on the death list is to head for the exits and go home. Christopher got the hell out of Texas. His abandonment was reckless. It prolonged his sentence. Y'all could forget it. He had numerous convictions and none were as strong as this. Unless you consider the other instance he went the distance. A similar situation. It was a bizarre coincidence when he escaped from prison the first time. Not this time, but the one before. He visited his dad because he was dying inside of a mental ward, suffering from Alzheimer's. He paid respects, made his peace. When he was done, he didn't run. He returned himself back to the police. That's when his mom made her plea. She said, he knows what he done was wrong.
Just running from cops. Christopher Gay was now racing the clock. clock. His mother was dying and there was no time to be held inside of a cage of blocks. So y'all can go on and toss your rocks and talk your talk like this, this. Meanwhile, Chris is stealing a tractor trailer from Walmart. An 18-wheeler, he's stealing rubbers. The bird takes flight down turnpikes. $300,000 worth of merchandise, but it ain't worth her life. Ran it off the road and abandoned it 50 yards from his mom to avoid the cops. That's half a football field from a feeble lawn. After all the stuff, the tour bus, the pickup trucks, the tractor trailer, interstate chases, he put on the brakes and couldn't get close enough. The news reporters told people to lock their doors, like there was a monster on the loose, but there was no truth to those reports. His mom had weeks to live, and Chris had years to serve. They were within shouting distance, but I don't think he heard her final word. But I don't think he heard her final word. She made her plea to the TV. He knows what he's done was wrong. He knows what he's done was wrong, but he knows his mama don't got long. His mama don't got long. He's not a fugitive on the run. He's not a fugitive on the run. He's not dangerous, he's my son. He ain't never hurt no one. He knows what he's done was wrong. He knows what he's done was wrong, but he knows his mama don't got long. His mama don't got long. He's not a fugitive on the run. Not a fugitive on the run. He's my son. Time he escaped from a state cop at a Georgia pit stop. He just slipped out of the handcuffs. He jumped ship and he took off with no father to visit and no mom to go home to. Just an open road where he could be free. Little baby with no father to visit, no mom to go home to. Just a wide open sky where he could fly. With no father to visit, no mom to go home to. Just an open road where he could be free. Little baby with no father to visit, no mom to go home to. Just a wide open sky where he can fly. With no father to visit, no mom to go home to. Just an open road where he can be free. With no father to visit, no mom to go home to. Just a wide open sky where he can fly. With no father to visit, no mom to go home to. Just an open road where he can be free. Little Houdini.
Talking about something that a lot of people are familiar with, the Our Father prayer. I'm sure you're familiar with the prayer. You know, Our Father in the heavens. Did it say that prayer? Mm-hmm. You ever hear the expression God's kingdom? Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. You're one of the first. How you feel about the things going on?
I don't feel like they're very good at all.
I know. It seems like something's going to come to a head. Just a little while longer, and the wicked one will be no more, and you will certainly give attention to this place that you will not be. But the righteous themselves will possess the earth, and they will reside forever upon it. How long does it say that they can live on the earth?
On this earth?
It says forever. And sometimes that's a new thought for people, but...
That's kind of scary.
Well, that is a promise from God. Sometimes it's a new thought for people who think, yeah, right, live forever.
And you're still listening to CITR FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and Nanardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. You just heard right there, Little Houdini by Sage Francis. And before that, an interview with Sage Francis from Providence, Rhode Island. Right now, you're going to hear the entire The Greatest LP by Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, from Louisville, Kentucky, wearing black tie, Mr. Cassius Marcellus Clay. For his first reading, Mr. Clay will honor us with a recitation of his classic poem, I am the greatest.
I am the greatest. legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. He talks a great deal and brags indeed of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary. Then someone with color, someone with dash, brought fight fans a-running with cash. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. This kid's got a left. This kid's got a right. If he hits you once, you're asleep for the night. And as you lie on the floor, while the ref counts 10, you pray that you won't have to fight me again. For I am the man this poem is about, the next champ of the world, there isn't a doubt. This I predict, and I know the score. I'll be champ of the world in 64. When I say three, they go in the third. So don't bet against me. I'm a man of my word. If Cassia says a cow can lay an egg, don't ask how. Grease that skillet. He is the greatest. Yes, I'm the man this poem is about. I'll be champ of the world. There isn't a doubt. Here I predict Mr. Liston's dismemberment. I'll hit him so hard, he'll wonder where October and November went. When I say two, there's never a third. Betting against me is completely absurd. When Cassia says a mouse can outrun a horse, don't ask how. Put your money where your mouse is. I am the greatest. Take old man Liston's title away. Me, a little old kid who don't even shave yet. I'm going to be champ of the world before I'm old enough to do my first shaving commercial. And I'm going to make boxing popular again. Me, with my beautiful, colorful personality. I'm going to make boxing interesting. Boxing doesn't have to be dull. It's the fighters who are dull. I watch the fight of the week on TV. They call that the fight of the week. It was so boring, every time the bell rang, it woke up the referee. It hurts me to say this because I know a lot of fighters, and I like them. They are nice, gentle guys who wouldn't hurt anybody, not even in the ring. And I'm going to bring back the excitement in boxing. I'm going to be the heavyweight champion of the world, and I won't be satisfied with that. After becoming champion of the world, I'm going to become champion of the universe. I want to take on those little green men from Venus. Those slick, shiny-headed green men. I can lick them. I won't be afraid of the way they look. After all, they can't look no worse than Sonny Liston. Yes, America, I'm the resurrector of the fight game. I'm going to save boxing. I'm going to bring boxing back to life. Fighting was dull until I came along because the greatest wasn't around. But time brings about a change. As the earth rotates around the sun, a change takes place. There's spring, summer, fall, and winter. Boxing was at the winter stage. But now the flowers are blooming. Spring is coming. I am on the horizon. Liston's fall will mark the arrival of spring. Yes, there's going to be a new champion. A champion you can tell your kids to be like. I'm a perfect idol for the kids. I'm good looking, clean living, cultured, and I am modest. I am so modest I can admit my own fault. My only fault is I don't realize how great I really am. It's hard to be humble when you are as great as I am. I'm the new frontier of boxing, and boxing must move ahead. I'm going to win the championship with vigor. That's part of my physical fitness program. All Sonny Liston's got is a physical fatness program. And with my vigor, I'm going to ask Congress to help Mr. Liston. I will ask them to pass a health bill. Because after old Mr. Liston fights me, he's going to need Medicare. And if I hit him in the mouth, he's going to need Dentacare. Yes, I'm going to move boxing ahead. I don't ask what boxing can do for me. I ask what I can do for boxing. Because I am great. I am the greatest. And I can even tell the truth about the future. To prove this point, I would like to read one of the many masterpieces I wrote this afternoon. My Prophecies by Cassius Clay. When Cassius says a fight will go 5 rounds, the bell for the 6th just never sounds. When I tangled with Archie, I predicted 4, and that's all there was. There wasn't any more. When they queried me about the Cooper bout, I answered with Shakespearean thrift. When they asked me what round I knocked Henry out, I answered, Henry the 5th. People ask me how I became a poet. I tell them, I didn't become a poet. I was born a poet. Poetry comes natural to me, like boxing. A lot of people are surprised that a fighter like me is such a great poet. They say boxing and poetry don't mix. They are wrong. Boxing and poetry do mix. This same fist that can knock out a man holds a pen that writes a poem. Now that's poetic justice. Poetry and boxing do mix. All the great poets should have been fighters. Take Keats and Shelley for an example. They were pretty good poets, but they died young. You know why? Because they didn't train. They say you should write poems about what you know, about what you love. I write poems about what I love. I write about me. A lot of people don't see the beauty in poetry. They don't realize that a poem is even more beautiful than a left jab to the nose. To show you the beauty in poetry, I like to read a poem by one of the greatest poets of all time. This is the most beautiful poem ever written. I wrote it about 6 months ago. This is my greatest poem, and I'm looking forward to 1965 when I'm going to read it in Washington, D.C. at the inauguration of the president. This poem is entitled, I Am the Greatest, number 73, by Cassius Clay. For those of you who haven't heard, I'm a most enchanting guy.
A most enchanting guy.
The greatest boxer that ever lived. Would you like me to tell you why?
Tell us why.
Tell us why. I was born the champion. I'm poetic. I'm brash. I swing.
Swing.
My greatness is too much for me. Man, I'm everything.
Thing?
Cassius of old dropped Caesar 20 centuries ago.
Go, go, go.
And this Cassius will cool Liston, as you already know.
No, no, no.
Yes, yes, yes. For at the end of the bout, you're gonna hear the ref shout,
the winner and new champion.
Mr. Liston won't see that the victor is me. For stars are all he'll be seen.
Twinkle, twinkle, little stars, Liston's on his way to Mars.
No, Liston won't hear. He'll be flat on his ear, and I'll be new champion.
No, you'll be new champion.
They all must fall in the round I call.
They all must lose in the round you choose.
You can say that again.
They all must lose in the round you choose.
I am the greatest.
Hail Cassius, you are the greatest.
And just as I prophesy the round of each victory, I hereby claim I can do the same with this bit of poetry.
Impossible.
We don't believe it.
I can achieve it.
We'll bet you can't do it.
Don't wager, you'll ruin it.
We think it's a fiction. What's your prediction?
Just to save time, three words from me will end this round.
It's one of his jokes.
That's all, folks.
I've been asked, what will I do after I retire from the ring?
Since I'm so dramatic and so theatrical, I will write for the theater. I will become Kentucky Clay. Now I would like to present a scene from one of my short, poetic dramas. This play is very symbolic. The character named Cassius symbolizes me and represents greatness and beauty. The play is set in very old England. It is called Much Ado About Cassius, or The Lady Is Not for Bernie.
Father, is not that the Prime Minister I spy thither?
It is, you spy well, daughter. What ho, Prime Minister? What ho?
You called me, Your Highness.
Yes, it is I, King Alfred the Terrified.
Oh, terrified.
What news of the terrible dragon?
Fire, the dragon hath dragooned again. Last night he vanquished our last knight.
Alas, with no more knights left, is there no one who can stop the fire-breathing dragon?
Oh, King Daddy, there is one in the court who speaketh much of his desire to slay the dragon. He is but a youth, but he has already put down 6 dragons.
Oh, what a put-down.
4, that is more dragons than Smokey the Bear hath extinguished him.
Tell me, daughter, this youth, how is he called?
One does but shout his name, and there he is.
I know the youth, Fire. The dragons he hath defeated are but the small dragons from across the sea. Do you know the small dragons I speak of?
Yes, they are the Volks dragons. Seriously, though, folks. I wouldst have words with this youth. Page him.
Send forth for Cassius of Clay.
Send forth for Cassius of Clay.
Send forth for Cassius of Clay.
Sire, this is the youth.
And so, thou art the stripling that wouldest kill the dragon?
Not wouldest, but couldest.
Goodest.
Give me but leave to slay, and he'll breathe no fire at the end of day.
Young sir, to arrive at the dragon, one must cross the dangerous and treacherous moor. You willest need 7 league boots.
I worry not the danger. I have actually crossed the moor. I had no need for 7 league boots. I only needed 4.
He thinks this lad has a tongue in his mouth. With that tongue of sore, the dragon wouldst be holier than thou. What thinkest thou, daughter?
Oh, your fathership, I loveth him. And when I think that he may fail to deliver us from the dragon, I quiver.
Fair maid, do not quiver. I deliver. And I will return with yon dragon's pate when your sundial strikes the hour of 8.
And Cassius went forth across the moor.
Oh, oh.
And Cassius went 5th past the home of Henry the Cooper.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. As he walked upon the road, his thoughts were on the wench, and he did not spy the dragon belching fire and creating a scene.
Meanwhile, back at the wench.
Oh, King Daddy, disaster hath strucketh.
What is the matter?
Clouds have obscured the sun. My sundial stoppeth. Who knows the hour? Who?
The little hand is on the 8th.
And the big hand is on the 12th.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Our last
Basilak, I fear brave Cassius will not come back.
Have no fear, daughter, for on the horizon I see the lad coming, and he's pulling a dragon.
Hooray! 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 After all his bragging, he's dragging a dragon.
All hail! Cassius returning. He carries a pate that is no longer burning.
He has slain the dragon. I will call it a day and make him a knight. I dub thee Sir Cassius. And as further reward, I give thee my daughter's hand.
Yoicks! You offer me your daughter's hand, and though some would claim it is the best of her, I must refuse. Please understand, unless you throw in the rest of her.
The young knight is wise to speak thusly.
And practical.
And he is so handsome. Our mother told me there'd be knights like this.
My thanks I give really, but may I speak freely?
At some other time, as for now, continue in rhyme.
I have slain the dragon, and that's that, sir. But the reward I've received seems quite flat, sir.
I resent that.
It's not that I don't like your daughter, but I was hoping you'd give me your hat, sir.
My crown? It weighs too much for thy young brow.
Sire! Don't think me a clown, but it's just what I want. A heavyweight crown.
If that's what you wisheth, it's yours.
Will Cassius
put on the heavyweight crown?
Will Cassius
wed the king's daughter?
Will Cassius
be given a title?
Will Cassius
be given a purse?
Will Cassius
enjoy the scene?
Will Cassius
enjoy the success?
Don't tune in tomorrow. The answer is
yes. And I'm going to greater glory yet. I'm going to be my own port laureate. I am the greatest.
You are the greatest.
I'm the end.
The end. End. It's the end.
And you're still listening to CITR FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and Denardoir, the Human Serviette radio show. You just heard right there the entire Cassius Clay LP, The Greatest, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali. To end Denardoir, the Human Serviette radio show, two songs by two Sydney bands, one from 1965 and one from 2010. And I'm talking about Sydney, Australia, from 2010, The Holy Soul, with their song I'll Be Drinking Till We Meet, and The Missing Links, from 1965, with their song Hold Home Tass, which is Hey Mama, Keep Your Big Mouth Shut Backwards. Yes, the entire song is backwards. 1965, amazing. 2010, amazing. Here's The Missing Links, and then The Holy Soul.
We'll be right back. stain of the blood upon my sleeve. The way things go sometimes, it'd just be best to leave. But I might just stay a while, because I do believe that I